as we meet here tonight, people in a number of cities along the Gulf Coast of our nation are worried about the fate of their city. They are concerned about what Hurricane Isaac might bring. I'm sure memories of Hurricane Katrina are in the front of their minds. Is the devastation on New Orleans is a concern that folks would have about their city. It's only natural that people have a concern about the place that they live, about their home, about places that are special to them. I'd like this evening to begin a two-lesson series on the concern that disciples expressed to Jesus regarding the fate of Jerusalem. Matthew, the 24th chapter, is the text where this is recorded. And we find that perhaps in our discussions with friends and family, or in our readings and our studies, maybe you have discovered that people have a lot of different views about what this chapter is all about. Some people will apply it to the end of time. Is that what Jesus is discussing, the end of time? Others will, millennialists will apply it to the millennium and what's going to transpire when Jesus comes again, leading to that 1,000-year period that they anticipate him initiating when he comes again. Well, I want to look at this chapter with you and think about some things that I believe are revealed in the chapter that give answer to some of these questions of exactly what is Jesus discussing. But I'd like for you to notice with me the first couple of verses as we begin our study, where we're told that Jesus came out from the temple and was going away when his disciples came up to point out the temple buildings to him. And he answered, said to them, "Do you not see all these things? Truly, I say to you, not one stone here shall be left upon another, which will not be torn down." The temple was, of course, the pride and joy of most Jews, particularly those that were making some kind of effort at following the covenant that was given through Moses. It was a beautiful building, and we can read descriptions in the scriptures of the opulent way in which it was decorated. It was world-renowned in this day and time of Jesus as a beautiful structure. And it had been in days of old, in the Old Testament period. There was a time when the temple was noted as well for its grandeur. And so it's quite natural, it seems to me, that we have these disciples expressing some kind of pride about the temple. They draw Jesus' attention to the temple. They ask him as they're going away, or at least they point out to him as they're going away, the buildings, the temple and the buildings associated with it. And then Jesus, I think, probably makes a rather startling declaration to them in verse 2 when he says, "Well, what I'm going to tell you about these grand buildings is that there's not going to be a stone left upon another one. They're all going to be torn down." So Jesus made this startling revelation to these men about the destiny of the city. Now, as history bears out, it doesn't occur, this destruction of the city doesn't occur for four more decades after the time that Jesus speaks these words. But he looks, as it were, down the halls of time and sees what the destiny of the city was, and he reveals that to these disciples. Verse 3 goes on to tell us that he was sitting on the Mount of Olives. So he's now left, the scene changes. They've left the city. They've crossed the Kidron Valley on the eastern side of the city, and they've gone up then into the Mount of Olives, from where they could look out and survey the city, looking out over the city. He was sitting on the Mount of Olives, and the disciples came to him privately, saying, "Tell us when these things will be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age." There are a lot of things involved in these questions that the disciples raise regarding the Lord, or regarding what the Lord has said. They ask to be told, when will these things be? What are going to be the signs? What are going to be the indications? Because it seems to me that they have drawn a conclusion that the destruction of the temple and of the buildings around it, and the destruction of the city in general, must necessarily involve some great earth-shaking event in their minds. And so they want to know, what will the signs be? Surely something this significant will be preceded by some signs to indicate it is going to happen. And then they say, and you're coming, and the end of the age. What? They just want to know more about what Jesus has said is the fate of Jerusalem. Well, Jesus then sets out in a rather lengthy explanation, and in which I'm persuaded he is discussing Jerusalem, not the end of the world, not some millennium that is going to be initiated at some future time, but that he's talking about what he began talking about, and that was the destruction of this city, when not one stone will rest upon the other, when all of the stones will be torn down. So I'm not sure that we ought to allow the questioning of the disciples in verse 3 to have a heavy influence on our understanding. Some folks would say, well, look, they ask about the end of the age. Well, maybe they drew a wrong conclusion about what was going to be involved in the destruction of the city. Or maybe they meant something different than the end of time, but rather they were talking about an epic, the end of the epic, because if the temple is going to be destroyed and Jerusalem is going to be destroyed, what must this say then about the Jewish economy, about the covenant age of Moses that they have lived under? Surely the destruction of the city may very well involve some implications for their Jewish system. And so they ask about signs for the end of this Jewish age. But Jesus, it seems to me, answers the question rather directly and rather specifically. He begins by warning them about this time when it would come would be a deceptive time. The possibility of deception of the citizens of the city of Jerusalem, and even of the disciples themselves. Look in verse 4. Jesus answered, said to them, "See to it that no one misleads you. For many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will mislead many." Now, this was going to be a tumultuous time, a confusing time. And in the midst of that, Jesus is saying, will come those who will claim to be the Christ. And as a result, many people are going to be misled. You will be hearing of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not frightened, for those things must take place, but that is not yet the end. We've read that passage, I'm sure, and heard it cited many times about the wars and the rumors of wars. Jesus is just saying it's going to be a violent time. It's going to be a time of great overturned. And you're going to be hearing about conflicts, military conflicts, as this time approaches. But don't be frightened by this. Don't let these things become a reason for uncertainty in your mind and uncertainty in your devotion to me and to my Father. He says that these things must take place. But that is not yet the end. It's not yet the end of what? Well, it's not the end of what he started out talking about. He started out talking about the city. At the end of the city. So, but these troublesome times that will arise and disconcerting events that may occur, that's not going to be the end. He says, because nation, verse 7, will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and in various places there will be famines and earthquakes. But all these things are merely the beginning of birth pangs. Now, what in the world is he talking about when he says that all of these uncertain, you know, surprising events that come along, these are just going to be birth pangs? If you're not aware of what birth pangs are, you talk to your wife and she'll explain it to you. It's just a metaphorical way to talk about the events that are building to a climax. Events that are leading to the end of the city. And they're going to be painful. They're going to be difficult times. And so you see, as Jesus begins his answer, he talks to his disciples about the deception that may come in these times. He also talks about the delivery that will come in verse 9. Then they will deliver you to tribulation. The "you," it seems to me, is a clear reference to these disciples who have come questioning Jesus and asking for this further explanation. Certainly, Jesus spent a number of occasions with his disciples describing how they were going to be persecuted and how they should anticipate this. And here again, he says, you'll be delivered over to tribulations, to troubling times. They're going to not only deliver you to tribulation, but they will kill you. And you will be hated by all nations on account of my name. And at that time, many will fall away and will deliver up one another and hate one another. It's a sad picture that Jesus paints here of, in these trying times, in these hard and difficult times, that there was going to be betrayal. And I suspect that betrayal may apply to people in general, citizens of the city, but it would include, as well as he's talking to these disciples about their delivery, it would include as well disciples who would betray one another and who would turn one another over to the officials who were delivering them over to tribulation and to death. Go on with the reading. He says, at that time there will be many that fall away. In verse 11, he says, many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. So we see the continuation of deception in these uncertain times. And because lawlessness increased, most people's love will grow cold. Here again, I can't escape the conclusion that he's talking about his people, and that during this time of trial and this time of difficulty, they were not only going to begin, in some instances, to turn on one another and to betray one another, but they were going to be misled again by false teachers or false prophets that would arise teaching things about the current state of affairs, the current situation, how to be delivered from it, how to escape it. I mean, surely we have had enough experience in seeing and hearing the kinds of false doctrines that are taught in our own day and time within the religious world, that we can understand and we can imagine how in dire circumstances like this, that the ground would be fertile for false teachers to mislead people. And then for even disciples' love for the Lord to grow cold and for them to depart from Him. The one who endures to the end. What end? The end of these times. To the end of this city. Those who will endure to the end, he shall be saved. This is the way to survive these times. It's not by listening to these false teachers who will appear on the scene and who will offer ways of deliverance. He said the way to be delivered is to endure in your faith, even through these difficult times. The one who endures to the end, he shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world for a witness to all the nations, and then the end shall come. The gospel is going to spread. It's going to be spread. And as I said, Jesus is looking at 40 years, at four decades down the road. And for four decades, the gospel is going to have opportunity to be spread throughout the world. Scriptures talk about the fact that was accomplished. The Apostle Paul, writing to the Galatians, makes that reference. But Jesus says the gospel will be spread to the whole world for a witness to all the nations. Then the end shall come. What end? End of the world? No. The end of the city. The end that he began speaking about. Well, then he talks about in verses 15 through 31, a subject that he introduces as the abomination of desolation. There is a desolateness that's associated with the destruction of this city, as is true of the destruction of any city. But he says, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand this. Parenthetically included there. That means you're going to have to think about this. You're going to have to give this some careful consideration. But when you see the abomination of desolation standing, spoken of by Daniel, standing in the holy place, that's the temple, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to get the things out that are in his house. Let him who is in the field not turn back to get his cloak. Woe to those who are with child and to those who nurse babies in those days. But pray that your flight might not be in the winter or on a Sabbath. For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not occurred since the beginning of the world until now. Nor ever shall. Well, those are interesting instructions that Jesus gives. If this passage is about anything other than the destruction of the city of Jerusalem, why in the world would he talk about, now don't leave the field and go back to your house and get things out of the house when you see this sign, the abomination of desolation, that's standing in the holy place. You know that these events are about to happen. Don't go back and try to get your things out of the house. If you're up on the roof, don't go down into the house and start gathering up all of your things. Here, a couple of years ago, we had some of the fires that were burning around in our vicinity. And it got close enough over by our house that the word was beginning to be spread among our neighbors that you need to be ready to leave. You need to be ready to go. Well, Robin was at home by herself at that time, and she told me later, you know, she was kind of frantic about, okay, what do I take? I got to get my stuff together, the things I want to be sure survive. If our house gets burned down, what do I take? Well, what Jesus is saying here in regards to his discussion about the fate of Jerusalem is the downfall of it. When this abomination of desolation that you see standing in the holy place, it's already in the city. When this occurs, don't you worry about picking up the things that you want to take with you. You just get out of there. Pray that you're not pregnant, which would complicate your fleeing from this city. I mean, why tell people to flee from the city unless that's what this is about? The destruction of the city. What is this abomination of desolation? Well, I think most of us are familiar with what an abomination is. That which is so completely foreign to what is right, to what is holy. But this is an abomination that is associated with a desolation. And indeed, 4 decades after the time that Jesus spoke these words, the Roman army marched into Jerusalem, destroyed the city, and it never revived again. Now, I know but David, there's a Jerusalem over there today. It's still on the same side. Yeah, that's right. But this Jerusalem is not there. This Jerusalem did not survive. They have no king ruling from the throne in Jerusalem. They have no priest serving. They cannot provide these elements of the law. This Jerusalem cannot come back. The Romans are this abomination of desolation. And Jesus was referring to the prophet Daniel's words over in the book of Daniel chapter 9. If you'd look over there with me, we'll just quickly look at the background of what Daniel says. In this passage, he is describing a period of time. He describes it as a period of 70 weeks. But notice, he says, 70 weeks, verse 24, have been decreed for your people. This is a message being given to Daniel. And your holy city. So what God says to Daniel is, we're going to look down the corridors of time. And I'm going to tell you, from this point in time, and this is roughly 600 years before Christ. But from this point in time, we're going to look down history and see what's going to happen to your people and to your city. And he says 70 weeks have been declared, in which here's what's going to be accomplished in the sweep of this entire period. The finishing of the transgression, to make an end of sin, to make atonement for iniquity. He uses 3 words here that basically describe sin. He talks about transgression, he talks about sin, he talks about iniquity, and each word is associated with a termination. That is, in this 70-week period, there is going to be brought about an end of these things. To bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. What the Lord is saying here is that in this period of time, Daniel, I'm going to solve the sin problem, bring an end to the domination of sin over mankind, and I'm going to bring in everlasting righteousness for men. And I'm going to seal up, that is, I'm going to complete prophecy and visions. And I'm going to anoint, bring about the anointing of the Holy One. Now, what is that but a description, just a general summary of what was accomplished by Jesus. He solves the sin problem. He brings in righteousness that is eternal in its nature. He seals up, he finishes, he completes prophecy and vision. And he is anointed as the Holy One. He is identified as the anointed one of God. That's what the term Christ or Messiah means. So that's the kind of the summary, the overarching summary of this period of time that God is describing. It's going to take hundreds of years to accomplish. The 70 weeks is figurative, but in the course of God's working over hundreds of years, this is what's going to be accomplished. Now, in verse 25, he says, "So you are to know and discern that from the issuing of a decree," there's going to be a decree issued, "to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. And indeed, Cyrus the Persian issued a decree freeing the people to go back to their homeland, which they did. And then over the course of time," now he's talking about the 7 weeks and the 62 weeks. So now he's talking about a period of 69 of the 70 weeks. In the course of that time, people are going to return. They're going to reestablish themselves in the land. The Messiah is going to make his appearance in their midst. And the city is going to be built with plaza and moat, even in times of distress. There are going to be hard times in this period, but the city's going to be rebuilt. Then, after the 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off. So, when the 7 weeks and the 62 weeks are finished, when the 62-week period ends, then the Messiah who has appeared is going to be cut off. That can be nothing other than the crucifixion of Jesus. He will be cut off and have nothing. "The people of the Prince who is to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary." There's the destruction of the city. He doesn't identify them here. In fact, Daniel doesn't identify them by name anywhere in his book. But it's the Romans. History reveals their identity. The Romans are the ones who were led by the prince who is to come, who will destroy the city and the sanctuary. "And its end will come with a flood. Even to the end there will be war. Desolations are determined. And he will make a firm covenant." That's the prince, the leader of these destroying people. "He will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week. But in the middle of the week, he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering. And on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate, even until a complete destruction. One that is decreed is poured out on the one who makes desolate." So what the Romans are going to do is they're going to bring to an end the sacrificing, the services that were rendered to God in that sanctuary or in that temple. They're going to bring that to an end because they're going to destroy the place. They're going to destroy the city as a whole. But that last phrase where he talks about the destruction, complete destruction, that is decreed, is poured out on the one who makes desolate. Rome's going to meet their end, is what he's saying. It'll be further on down the road, but their demise is as certain as Jerusalem's is, because it's decreed by God. That's what Jesus is talking about in Matthew chapter 24. When he says, "When you see the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place, then you get away from this place. You get out of here. Don't waste your time on things that don't matter, trying to collect your possessions and your belongings. You make your escape while you can." Well, we'll stop there this evening. Our time is expired. But it's, I think, interesting to take note that what's under discussion here is, as I've said, the fate of a city. And Jesus is trying to prepare his disciples for what lay ahead. But Jesus wasn't just concerned about a city and buildings. He was concerned about people. And if you back up to the 23rd chapter of Matthew and the 37th verse, we see Jesus saying, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem." He's not talking to buildings. He's talking to people, the people that are Jerusalem. The people who, he says, kill the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together, the way a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you were unwilling. They were unwilling to accept him. They were unwilling to respond to him. What I would ask you this evening, as an individual, not really so much concerned about cities and the fate of cities or even the fate of this city, but you as an individual, Jesus yet wants to gather you to himself. If you've never come to him, he's invited you, Matthew the 11th chapter, "Come unto me." Won't you do that? Or are you like this city that we're talking about, just unwilling? We pray that's not the case, and that tonight will be the night that you will come to him. You'll give yourself to him in obedience to his gospel while we're standing to sing.